Samsung says it won't make a Note this year. Zoom comes to Fire TV. PlayStation is a hit. Well, if you can get one. Plus, your tech questions answered. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMiro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. It's also the place where I answer the questions you send me. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Hope you are having a fantastic day. Wow, the summer is coming to a close. I did a story with some kids the other day at a camp, and if you can believe it, school starts August 16th. For a lot of the schools in Los Angeles, which when I was a kid, we always started after Labor Day, which I feel like makes more sense, but I don't know. I mean, what do I know? As a parent, I guess you want your kids to go back, but I don't know. It seems so early. Like, I'm like, how many weeks is the summer nowadays? One thing I do like, though, is that reviews are coming in for Vilo. This is the mesh networking system I talked about. That's $60. And it's always, you know, as a tech person, it's always interesting to do reports on things that are brand new and nobody's ever seen them before, because typically, you know, a manufacturer will send me something and I'll have hands-on time before anyone else. And, you know, they have this thing called an embargo. And then they lift that embargo at a certain time, and everyone who had it secretly, comes out and says, oh, I've had this for 2 weeks, and here are my thoughts on it. And so that's what happened with this Vilo, V-I-L-O, by the way. And I was like, okay, well, I think it's really good, but I put my review out there and, you know, started seeing other people's reviews, and, you know, people were saying it was pretty good. But then I really wait for all the folks that write me to tell me if they purchased one and what they think of it. And the good news is, oh, music's still on there. Look at that. The good news is the reviews are in and people are telling me they love it. So they're saying they're getting a great signal. They're liking it. It's boosting their Wi-Fi. And I'm very happy because, you know, it's like, okay, I thought this was really good. I shared it and clearly it is. Let's start with Samsung this week. Samsung is having an event on August 11th, and Samsung is not like Apple where they just keep everything sort of secret until the big day. They keep some stuff secret, and but they give a lot of hints, right? At least Samsung does. Apple doesn't really give any hints. So Samsung's been coming out with a couple of blog posts in anticipation of their big event, and the latest is a blog post that is titled, "The Next Era of Smartphone Innovation is About to Unfold," and I'm guessing the pictures they're showing at the top are of the old foldable phones, because they wouldn't show the new ones, right? But they say, all kinds of, let's just get to the good stuff, basically. Well, one thing, they did a little knock on the open ecosystem. They said, as we enter this new era of agile transformation, I believe that open ecosystems are the only way to accelerate innovation and give people more freedom to create their own experiences that are best for their lifestyles. Now, I got to give that a major, because that's really a knock against Apple. Apple's been going through this lawsuit with the whole, you know, Epic Games and all this stuff. And basically, Apple is saying the reason why they're so closed down is because they want to keep things secure. And that's probably true, but only to an extent. And I will say that I am continually impressed with how much Apple has been able to do with such a closed system. Like the other day, I asked to play a song on my phone and it did go to Spotify automatically, which historically that didn't happen. But now Siri apparently learns which music service you're using. And I flip between a whole bunch of them. And so clearly I've been using Spotify the most lately to test the whole downloading to Apple Watch, the music thing. And Siri apparently has taken notice of that. So anyway, in a few weeks, they say they're going to unleash their latest and greatest Galaxy Z series. And they say they completely improved, or we kept improving the category with our second generation of foldables, the Galaxy Z Fold 2 and the Galaxy Z Flip, with more screens and more of the features. Now they're saying the third generation are going to open up amazing multitasking capabilities and enhanced durability. Let's see, what else? At Samsung, open and secure are never mutually exclusive. Again, that knock on Apple. And for our third generation of Galaxy Z phones, we have more partner apps that make use of the versatile fold-out format. Optimize video with Google Duo, watching videos in flex mode on YouTube, which they've already done. Multitasking in Teams. So, what else? Oh, the Z Flip is more durable with stronger materials. But here's the thing they buried all the way. Talk about, we have this this phrase in journalism called burying the lead, right? And talk about burying the lead. All the way at the end of this blog post, they mention, oh yeah, by the way, instead of unveiling a new Galaxy Note this time around, what? So, no Note this year. Spoil alert. No Galaxy Note. So they said, but they're going to build an S Pen into one of the Galaxy Z family devices, which is probably going to be the Fold, not the Flip. I know, all these things are so complicated, all these terms. But anyway, August 11th, if you were excited for a new Note, not happening. And that's kind of a big change for Samsung, because typically the Note is where Samsung puts all of its best new things. So all of its best new camera tech, all of its best new screen tech, all of its best new tech in general. And so now I guess the Fold is going to be the new flagship. And remember that they did make the S Pen compatible with the last generation of S21 devices. I think just the high-end devices like the S21 Ultra. But you can see they're getting away from that reliance on the S21 Ultra basically became a Note device, just without a little sleeve to put the Note in, or the stylus in. So anyway, August 11th, all things will be answered. Let's get to the first question. AJ says, hey, Rich, I'd like to download Oregon Ducks football picks from Instagram for my own entertainment. How do I do that with efficiency? Thanks. Love your content. You know that when I first came to California, I called Oregon Oregon, and I'll never forget being in my freshman dorm room, and my friends were like, no, it's Oregon, Oregon. I was like, Oregon. There's an O, Oregon. No, Oregon. So anyway, maybe it is Oregon, but I think it's more Oregon at this point. But anyway, I digress, as I typically do on the show. But the thing that I like the best, and I use this pretty much every day, it is a Chrome extension called Image Downloader. I know, such a complicated name, Image Downloader. And I'd give you a website, but I don't really have a website. It just search Image Downloader on Chrome, and you should see the extension. Let me see how many users are using this extension. See if I'm the only one. No, a million plus users from Vlad Sebev. So clearly people like this. But what I love about this this little Chrome extension is that no matter what web page you're on, this does not handle videos, but it does handle any image on a page. So whatever web page you're on, you just hit the downloader button, and next thing you know, it will show you all the images on that page, and you can download them. Like you get individual download links for all of those. And so it's just a really simple way of capturing an image and a you know, a full resolution of that image versus like a screenshot. And also it shows you sort of the multiple versions of that image on a page. So if there's like a little thumbnail image, you'll be able to tell, and that's not the one you want to download. You want to download the one that's bigger. And you can also set parameters. Like I only want pictures that are bigger than, you know, 100 pixels, or, you know, images that are only on a link. So it's really a really great little app, and I use it every day for my, you know, job, for editing purposes. If I need a picture off a blog post or something, really, really easy. And I did test it. It does work with Instagram, and you may want something that's for your phone. And I'm sure there are apps out there that can do this on your phone. I just did not research that, so I don't know, nor have I used that. But I know a lot of people use that like Repost app, which may do it, but I don't know if it downloads it. But if you search the App Store, are you on iPhone? It doesn't say if you're on iPhone or not, but I would just try it on your desktop. Just go to the Instagram page that you want once you download that, and click the little image downloader, and you should get the pictures that you need. All right, so two-way video calling with Zoom is now available on Amazon Fire TV Cube. And this is big. I tweeted about this, and I kind of always imagine this, you know, we call it a lean-back experience, right? The idea of just sitting on your couch and being able to watch, you know, streaming services or looking at your family pictures. But the idea of video chatting, for some reason, has yet to come to the television, and I don't know why. Now, yes, there are some solutions out there like Facebook's portal, but what is the deal? Why is there such a holdout? Is it just because people use their phones. But if you've ever video chatted on a phone, I feel like there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure to hold your phone in front of you. There's a lot of pressure to hold your phone steady. People are moving around all the time. So I don't feel like the phone is a good way of video chatting unless, you know, it's quick, it's simple, it's easy. Most people have a phone nearby. But I feel like this idea of video chatting on the couch would just be so much better if you had a webcam on top of your TV and you just sit back and you just talk to the other people on the other end. And for me, you know, I've got my family on the East Coast. It would be so nice to just have my parents or my siblings just in front of their TV because we just relax, you know, and we all just could sit there in our houses and chat with each other. Well, anyway, this is a reality with the Fire TV Cube. Last year, they launched Alexa. I had someone write me in and said, Rich, if you want to say that word on your podcast, you can say Alexa. So I'll say Alexa. So if you want, you can use Alexa to video chat on your Fire TV Cube. But Zoom is much more popular, and so now you can use the Zoom app. But here's the thing. Look at all the stuff you need. To access two-way video calling, you'll need to connect a webcam that supports USB video class, whatever that is, with at least 720p resolution and 30 frames per second using a micro USB to USB adapter. Now, who in their right mind, that's the average person that this is targeting, is going to know how to do that? And I like to use my mom as an example. That's the example here. If I'm like, Mom, we can finally video chat on a TV. Just go out and get a UVC USB video class camera with a 720p resolution and 30 frames per second. Plus, you know that micro USB to USB adapter you've been wanting to use? Yeah, you can use that too. No one's going to know how to do this. So why don't you just make a software update that lets you plug in a regular video camera to a regular, I guess it's only micro USB on the back, but it's just one of these things that, like, this is why this stuff hasn't taken off. This is way too complicated. And yes, all the techies at Amazon are saying, this is so cool, we can finally do this, but no real person knows how to do this. And even myself, I don't want to go out there and buy all this stuff. I will to try it out, but it just needs to be easy. We've got Apple TV. We've got Fire TV Cube. By the way, Fire TV Cube is a high-end Fire TV, so not even a lot of people have that. Most people have the sticks, and you're not going to be able to plug a webcam into the stick. Roku, same thing. They've got USB on the back of the big ones, but most people have the sticks. And so until we get a very simple method for plugging a webcam, a normal webcam, into the back of these TVs, it's just not going to happen. And yeah, the TV manufacturers should just do it themselves. Cut out the middleman. Why do we need all these boxes? I mean, I like them, but a lot of people just use their smart TV. Oh, look at Amazon put the links. Okay, so the webcam I have, the Logitech C920, does have... It is compatible. They actually were kind enough to include a list of compatible webcams and a list of compatible micro USB to USB adapters. So, you know, look, it's not tough. It's just one of these things where to do all this is kind of a lot. But I don't know. I'm tempted. I'm tempted to literally gift. My mom does use Fire TV, so I'm tempted to now gift her a Cube and then all these other little bells and whistles so that we can video chat. But I think the other side of this is, who really wants a video camera on top of their TV staring at your living room the whole time? I mean, it's just one of these things where maybe if there's a shutter on these, let me see, do any of these video cameras have a shutter? Because that would be probably the only way that the average person would do that. Okay, that one does not have a shutter. This one does not have a shutter. This one does not have a shutter. And that one does not have a shutter. So... there would probably have to be some sort of shutter mechanism to really make this thing take off, and I don't know if that's going to happen. Anyway, it is available. It's available now, and you can join Zoom meetings using a Fire TV Cube. All right, Robert has the next question. Hey, Rich, I bought a Fitbit Charge 4 and was wondering if the Fitbit app is the best choice to use with an iPhone. I see there are other apps that claim to connect better with Apple Health. What have you heard? Thanks, Robert. Robert, I would say stay away from the third-party apps. They are not, I guarantee you, they're not going to connect to Apple Health better than what Fitbit does. And quite honestly, I think the reason why you're looking is because Apple Health probably, and I don't know this for certain, but I'm pretty sure that Apple Health does not connect to Fitbit at all. Now, I may be wrong on that, and you can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I think that because Fitbit is made by Google and Google is warring, is, you know, frenemies with Apple, as is everyone these days, I think that the Fitbit app would be your best way to do it. Now, there is one other thing you can do, and I think this actually would be your best bet if you want that. Now, here's the thing. What Apple Health does really well is it integrates health data from various places. And so if you want sort of one thing, you know, to look at all of your data, like let's say you do a yoga class through an app, and let's say you do something on your Fitbit, and then you go for a run using Apple Health, you know, it's like, or Apple Workout app or whatever, you know, maybe you want all that stuff in one place. And so I understand why you'd want Apple Health, but here's what I've done, and it actually works pretty well. And I know Fitbit works with it because they're both Google, but you can download the Google Fit app. And as far as I can tell on my phone, Google Fit does somehow siphon the information out of Google Health, and it will also take the information from the Fitbit app. So if you have both those things feeding into the Fitbit app, now you've got a one-stop shop where you can have all of your fitness data in one place. And Google Fit is actually quite nice. It's simple. I really like the design. They have some good tips on, you know, some insights into what it learns from you as you work out. So I think that's probably the way that I would go. So good question. And again, this is what bugs me. It bugs me that all these tech companies force us into these silos. And I just hate being forced into a silo because it doesn't give us as much freedom to choose the services and the products that we want to use. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's a lot of it that works together, but a lot of it does not. And it gets kind of tricky when, you know, things just arbitrarily say, well, we're not going to work together because, you know, that's a product that's kind of in competition with us. Or, you know, you got to build things our way, or, you know, it's the highway. So that's where we're at. It's just a reality of the tech world, and maybe that'll change in the future. We're seeing some progress with that, especially as these antitrust, you know, there's inklings of antitrust always kind of pitter-pattering through the hallways of tech. So as that kind of scare stays with these tech companies, it sort of, you know, makes them want to do things that help the consumer. And so if those, you know, if that threat wasn't there, I can't imagine the world we'd live in, because I feel like a lot of stuff is kind of, you know, I test a lot of stuff and I just see the silos that people build. And so I don't like those. All right, let's get to the next story. Instagram, this is everyone's favorite social media app. Instagram has some new privacy, what do you call it? Some new safety measures for teens. So number one, obviously, we know that there's this big push and pull when it comes to young people on social media. If I, as a parent, had my way, I would never allow my kid to have a cell phone until they were like 35. But that's just not the reality. You know, you want to be able to get in touch with their kids, and next thing you know, they want to be able to get in touch with their friends, and they want to be on social media, and they want to become an influencer, they want to be on YouTube, they want to watch it, then they want to make videos. And all of this stuff is theoretically forbidden under 13, but we know that that's not happening. You know, kids are signing up, they're using different, you know, date of births, they're using their parents' phone. Look, the reality is it's there. Kids are on these things. And so Instagram knows that, and they're trying to do things to make it a bit of a safer experience. One of those new things is defaulting people under 18 into private accounts. Now, depends where you are. In the U.S., it's, well, let's see. Starting this week, everyone who is under 16 years old or 18 in certain countries will be defaulted into a private account when they join Instagram. Now, so in the U.S., I believe it's 16, but here's the thing. This is, when they say defaulted, it sounds better than it is. I mean, the kids who are signing up for this are the most tech-savvy people out there in the world. So they're not going to miss a little tiny menu that says, you know, do you want to be, you know, they're going to miss the thing where it says private, where they can switch it to public. They're not going to keep kids from switching it to public. They're just going to default. Now, if that saves or if that deflects 10% of signups to being into or defaulting them into, you know, private, then I guess that works. I mean, anything's better than nothing. Now, if they have a private account, obviously, you know the rules. So people have to follow you to see your posts. You have to choose to allow others to reshare your content. People can't comment on your content. They can't see your content at all in places like Explore or on hashtags. So that's a good thing, I think, for kids. Now, again, like I said earlier, a lot of kids want, or these are teens, a lot of teens want to become influencers. And so they're probably going to go to public. Or, you know, hey, they might just say, oh, yeah, I'll stay private. Like, all I care about are my friends. So that's cool. Now, for the teenagers or young people, they say that already have a public account on Instagram, Instagram's going to show them a notification saying, here's why we think you should be private, and then show them how to change their privacy settings. The other thing they're doing is using AI to not only identify adult accounts, even if you lie about your age, but also to identify creepy adults. And they don't use that term, but they call it potentially suspicious behavior. These are accounts that belong to adults that have been blocked or reported by a young person, for example. So this is not everything. It's just one thing. And so using this technology, they won't show young people's accounts in Explore or anything suggested to adults. And let's see, if they find young adults' accounts by searching for their usernames, they won't be able to follow them. So, I mean, Instagram, you know, it's kind of weird. I would call this like shadow banning almost, except, you know, shadow banning is kind of like when your stuff is not really shown to a lot of people because you've broken some sort of rule that is, you're not really aware of that, but Instagram doesn't really tell you. They just kind of don't show your stuff to as many people. And, you know, this kind of happens with Instagram accounts as well. There's a thing you can do called restrict. And so if I, let's say, for example, I'm on my Instagram and someone's really annoying me with their comments, I can restrict them. And they can still comment. They can still see my stuff. They can still interact with my stuff. They can like it. But guess what? Anything that they do is not viewable by anyone except them. So it's kind of like this, it's a shadow ban. I mean, it's a shadow ban that any Instagram user has the ability to enable. So the other thing they're doing is changing how advertisers can reach young people. Basically, they're only going to let them target on age, gender, and location and not interests. All right, Mike says, my 17 Honda Pilot did not come with a CD player. I'd like to have my entire CD collection on an MP3 player. I want the ability to play by artist, by genre, or by album. What do I buy? Thanks, Mike. Mike, I would recommend an iPod Touch. That's, you know, $200 for an iPod Touch. If you don't want to spend that much, then I would look on eBay. I am sure you can find an iPod Touch for cheaper than that price. If you want to, yeah, that's all I'd recommend. I would not go back further because the iPod, like, you know, if you go with like an iPod Classic or an iPod, you know, click wheel, whatever these, I forget the little one that I have at home. Like it's an old school one that I bought my wife a long time ago, but it's like a really thin one. It's like the solid state drive. I would go with an iPod Touch. And the reason why I would go with that over any other sort of MP3 player, I mean, there's a million ways you can do this, but you said you want the ability to play by artist, by genre, or by album. And I'm guessing a 2017 Honda Pilot probably has some iPod smarts built into it. And what I mean by that is that it will interface with your iPod to show the sorting methods that you want, which is artist, genre, or album. And so I think that is probably the best way to do it. You can easily hook it up into your car. You probably have a USB port in there. I'm trying to think my old car. You'll be fine. 2017 is not even that old. So I think you'll be okay. But yeah, you can get just a standard Apple Lightning connector. You pop it into the bottom of the iPod Touch, and now you've got your whole collection. You can throw the iPod Touch in your, run that wire nice so it looks nice and clean, and put the thing in your glove compartment or something, or just stow it out of view, and you can do that. Now, if you want me to recommend some apps, so for the CD player, you know, you can still rip CDs using iTunes, I believe. I mean, I don't think they took that out of there. But if you can't, there's a lot of, I don't know if they still do this. Let's see. On iTunes on PC, I'm not sure the Mac does it anymore. Ooh, that could be a problem. I don't see anything on the, let's see, iTunes Mac. Oh, you know what? Let me see. Let me just see something because this says Windows. Yeah, that's so weird. I don't know if you can do it on a Mac anymore. I know they've got Finder. How to rip, yeah. Okay, let's see. This was updated. Oh, yeah. Yes, of course you can. Okay. Yeah. So you can do it. Oh, use the music app on your Mac. Choose music preferences, then general. When a CD is inserted, choose the option import CD. And you import the CD into your library, and then you can put it onto your iPod. The other thing you can do if you want to just a one-off kind of thing or just a drag and drop is a program called Walter, W-A-L-T-R. And that's a great drag and drop option. Walter Pro just transfers pretty much any file onto your iPhone or iPad. It's $30 and it's really easy and it puts it in the right place. So it'll put like a book into the Books app. It'll put the, you know, MP3s into your music app. It'll put photos into the Photos app. So it's really, really smart and very easy. That's a drag and drop method. Good question. I know it's been a while. I mean, I used to have this car that I really wanted. I'm trying to remember what the deal was. It was an old BMW, and I'm trying to remember what the deal with this car was. It was, it had like support for the iPod, but it was very like limited. But I wanted to use like a streaming service, but I don't know. Anyway, I can't really remember what the story was, but anyway, I got rid of it, and you know, now my new car is CarPlay, so it's all good. It wasn't my car anyway; it was my wife's car, so I never had it. I would just drive it once in a while, and it did drive very nice, I have to say. All right, PlayStation 5. Let's see, PlayStation 5 now has surpassed 10 million units sold, and Sony says it's their fastest selling console in history. It has outpaced the PlayStation 4. So I don't think this means that it's sold more than the PlayStation 4, because clearly that's probably sold a lot. This is the fastest selling console. So there's a lot of ways to mix, you know, and slice and dice numbers and present them in a way that makes things look very successful. But the reality is this has sold more units in a shorter amount of time. But here is what the interesting part about this is. To me, I find it fascinating that this is so hard to get. So the fact that they've sold 10 million, if you were able to get this device, how many would they have sold? So that's what I find interesting about this. And Sony does acknowledge in this little post about the shortages, because this has been really bad. I mean, the PlayStation 5 launched on November 12th, 2020. Hard to believe it's been, you know, almost 8 months now. I mean, we're almost coming up to another holiday season where this thing is still going to be, you know, could be potentially tricky to get. Apple in their earnings call this week said that the iPhone could be tough to get because there's some little pieces in there that are getting held up on the supply chain. So again, we're seeing these shortages for everything. And Apple gave a little hint that the iPhone could be a problem. Now, I don't know if a lot of people are going to be upgrading this time around because the iPhone 12 was so good, and I think they called it like a super cycle or whatever. It was like a big upgrade for a lot of people, but I think that, who knows? I mean, people just upgrade their phone when they need a new one after 3-4 years. So it's no longer a yearly thing except for the real enthusiasts. So anyway, just be prepared if anything gets a little tight with the iPhone supply. But Sony does say we have a lot of work ahead for us as demand for PS5 continues to outstrip supply. I want gamers to know that while we continue to face unique challenges throughout the world that affect our industry, improving inventory levels remains a top priority for SIE, Sony Interactive Entertainment. All right, next question here from Bernadette. Hey, I'm working on a book about my 101-year-old mom. Wow. Mom has a lot of tape recordings that after trying to write down and then input into Word has turned into a logistical nightmare. Working on a PC with Windows 10, I was told Dragon was a possibility, but as you know, there's no refund policy once purchasing software. Another plan B was hiring a freelance stenographer. However, at a rate of $225 an hour, that's a little too rich, no pun intended, for my almost empty pocket. FYI, a portion of the proceeds will be donated to nonprofit charities. Any assistance will be greatly appreciated, Bernadette. Well, Bernadette, I have just the solution, and it's so dang easy. It is already on your computer, or let's see. Did you say you're using Word? Yes, you did. Okay, so you've already got Word. If you have a subscription to Office 365, which is like $7 a month, I know you said you've got an only almost empty pocket, but this is about your cheapest solution. You can upload these audio recordings into Word and it will transcribe them automatically. And it's amazing. I've done this before. I think it's unlimited. I've uploaded like an entire podcast episode and, I did get the entire transcript, and it's pretty good. So for my Larry David fans out there, I'd say it's pretty good. Bad impression. But yeah, so, I mean, that's what I would do. Now, I think the biggest challenge here reading your question is I have a lot of tape recordings. So I don't know what format these tape recordings are in, but that is what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to get those into a digital format to get those into Word. So you got to figure out how to do that. You might need some help with that. An easy way to do that is just to buy a cable on Amazon, which is like a standard headphone jack cable, but it has two headphone jacks on either end. You plug one into the device that plays the tape. You plug the other into the input jack on your computer and use whatever recording app that's on your computer to record these into a digital format. Then you take that digital file and you upload it to Microsoft Word. How do you upload it to Microsoft Word? Let me look in Microsoft Word, because if you're listening and you're like, Rich, that's a cool feature. How do I do it? And I don't really tell you how to do it. That's not very useful. Now, is it? So you open up a new Word document, and we just happen to have a subscription to Word through our company. There is a dictate button on the toolbar. There should be. This is the web version of Microsoft Word, okay? So you have to use that. Now, next to that dictate, it looks like a little microphone. There is a down arrow or a carrot pointing down. You press that, and then it reveals a transcribe button. And yes, I know I say button weird. And it says, generate a transcript by uploading your audio data, which can be a WAV file, an MP4, an M4A, or an MP3 to start a recording. So you can upload audio. Oh, wow, you can just start a recording. You can do it right from there. But I would just upload the audio, and you can do 300 minutes a month. So you may, depending on how long these things are, that I think is new, but maybe not. Interesting. I've never seen the 300 minutes a month. But, 300 minutes a month is definitely a bummer. But that might depend on your subscription. Mine's a corporate. I don't know what the deal is. So the other thing you can do is use what's called Descript, DESCRIPT, Descript.com. And this is going to cost you a little bit again. It's none of these things are free. When things are truly useful, they are not free. And I've noticed this over and over. If you want real software that does and solves real problems, it's going to cost you. And so, let's see. You can do 3 hours of transcription one time for free. $12, you can do 10 hours a month. So basically, you're looking at, if you don't want to do the Word thing, you can just use the script, and it would be $12 for a month of 10 hours. So it depends on how much you got. I mean, I don't really know how many recordings you have, but the $10 a month might be fine. Now, If you want to go $24 a month, you can go 30 hours of transcription. So maybe that's it. Maybe all you need is 1 month. And I would do, believe me, if I pay the $24, you definitely, definitely want to go and use the entire 30 hours. Do not split that job up. Like, make it your job every day to do that. So thanks for the question. Verizon has some new mobile hotspot plans, and I'm getting a lot of questions about mobile hotspots because people are still really hip on this whole work from wherever thing, and I understand. I mean, I came back to work, and we had, you know, no masks on, and next thing you know, a week later, all this is changing, and it's very dynamic right now. When I thought things were getting a little bit better, all of a sudden it's like, nope, put on those brakes. I'll keep my thoughts about that to myself. But, you know, nonetheless, this is what we find ourselves in. And so we are in a world where, you know, businesses continue to delay people going back to the office. And for some people, they really like that. And, you know, a mobile hotspot is a way to get a nice, solid internet connection wherever you are. Now, of course, your phone can do that, but you know, a dedicated hotspot definitely has its advantages. So the new plans, Essential, $20 a month for Verizon customers, and that's going to give you 15 gigs of data. $40 a month for Verizon customers gives you 5G and 50 gigs. $60 for Verizon customers will give you 5G and 100 gigs. And then you've got premium, which is $80 for Verizon customers, and that gives you 5G and 150 gigs. So if you're really, really a road warrior, the $80, 150 gigs would be fine. Now, if you have a Verizon plan, you know, obviously a lot of these plans come with mobile internet, and you can use that, you know, maybe start with that before you get a dedicated hotspot. So yeah, whether you need this is kind of up to you, but some of these plans are more expensive if you don't have a Verizon plan. So, you know, it all depends on what you're doing. If you're traveling every month, you know, a standalone plan would be nice. You know, or a standalone, sorry, I should say standalone hotspot. But if you're not traveling that much, I mean, I find that the hotspot on the phone works pretty well. I mean, the dedicated hotspot is just nice because you can set it up and just leave it there. Like if you go to a hotel room, you know, and I talked about this before on the podcast, it's just nice to just like kind of leave it there. You know, you don't have to really think about it much. When you come into the room, it connects. When you get out, it disconnects, and that's it. So I do like that aspect of it. All right, let's get to another question here. Speaking of vaccinations, Patricia says, digital vaccinated passport. Hey, Rich, I don't know if you covered this already, but which digital passport is best to use as proof of COVID-19 vaccinations? Patricia, there is not a one-size-fits-all solution for this just yet. I know we've heard of some of the, you know, some of the companies trying to come up with this, but your best bet at this time is really to just download the app from the company that gave you, I feel like I talked about this before, but I think your best bet is just to download the app from the company that that gave you the vaccine. So whether that's you know, Carbon Health here in Los Angeles or Clarity, whatever, just look into that and see if they have a an app. And sometimes in those apps, they have a way to sort of integrate the proof of vaccination into you know, either Apple Wallet or Google Pay. And actually, Google itself announced that they are actively working to bring the vaccination codes into Google Pay. Now, I don't know what the status of that is. It's probably going to be a while, but, you know, and it always takes longer than you think. But I think the best thing right now is just to keep a copy of that vaccination card on your phone and obviously just keep it safe somewhere. You know, in your house, you know, but keep a snapshot of it. I've the only time it came in handy for me so far is at Krispy Kreme. When I was at Krispy Kreme buying a donut, and I saw a little sign that said, if you're vaccinated, you get a free Krispy Kreme. And I said, oh, I have this. And sure enough, I showed the card on my phone, which I had taken a picture of because I was traveling. And they were like, here you go, free Krispy Kreme. And I thought that was great. So anyway, I enjoyed that. It was a very delicious donut. Krispy Kreme, by the way, 7 seconds in the microwave, and it tastes just like it would fresh out of the oven, you know, or if you've ever been to a Krispy Kreme, you know how they do it. They do this thing like where they have the Krispy Kremes hot, like they're coming off this like conveyor belt. And I think back in the day, you used to be able to ask for one. If you came in there while it was physically making the donuts, you could be like, hey, can I have a sample? And they would give you one along with a little hat, like a paper hat. Now, I don't know if they still do that, but I specifically remember doing that when I was living in Shreveport, Louisiana. When Krispy Kreme came to town, it was like a big deal. And Los Angeles, I don't think they have as many locations, but, you know, it's one of those things. Story from the Associated Press says that if you want to keep your phone safe from hackers, all you have to do is reset it. And this little article or this, I don't know what you call it, I don't know where this originated from. Well, I guess it says, let's see, as a member of the secretive Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Angus King has reason to worry about hackers. At a briefing by security staff this year, he said he got some advice on how to keep his cell phone secure. Turn it on, turn it off. That's it. And this is actually some decent advice. The reasoning that this that they give for turning the phone on and off is the fact that a lot of what Apple and Google have done is protected kind of the core base of your phone. So if a hacker is trying to get into it, they can't really get into like the deep dive of your device where they would need to really kind of do whatever they want, like wreak havoc on your phone. Now, especially with the iPhone, this is the case. And, you know, it's happening more and more with the Androids as well. But the iPhone, you know, I always talk about this idea of things being sandboxed, right? So when you have an app, it only kind of works with itself. It doesn't really interface with other apps. And if it does, it only does it in a way that Apple allows. Where on Android, there's definitely more leniency, but is that a word? Leniency? More lenience? I don't know. But it you know, it does more, but it's, you know, they're tightening things too over there. But anyway, the reality is how a lot of these hacks now work is, you know, they're called zero-day exploits, where it's kind of like a hole that they find that they exploit very quickly. And so for that reason, a lot of these things run in like the main memory, like the quick memory, not the deeper memory that stores all the info on your phone. And so if this idea of restarting your phone is right, what would happen is when you restart, the phone kind of takes stock of what's running in the local memory, and it basically doesn't allow anything it doesn't recognize to run because it's highly secure. So yes, is there a way around that? Of course, there always is. You know, hackers will find a way. But this is saying to restart your phone about once a week if you really want to protect your privacy. I mean, I can't say not to do that. I probably restart my phone. Now, when I'm on Android, I restart much more often than iPhone. iPhone, it could probably go probably a month without restarting. But sometimes I will restart just to kind of clean things up, clear things out, do whatever you do to, you know, to get the phone kind of back to, you know, a fresh restart kind of situation. But that's the idea of this turn your phone on and off once a week. I don't know. I'm not going to not recommend doing it. It's definitely an interesting take on the whole hack your phone thing. I would say, and I'm loath to say this, but I feel like most people's phones are not really at risk of hacking. I think that there are much bigger concerns out there. And I think that clicking on nefarious links is a big concern. I think that, you know, subscriptions that you subscribe to that you forget about and you get charged $20 and sometimes even more. I think that's a problem. I think there's a lot of other things, you know, stealing your personal information willingly, like handing it over. So I think that there are a lot of things that happen on smartphones that are pretty bad. I think that a lot of these high level, you know, hack attacks that we hear about, you know, for the average person, if you're not a journalist or you're not someone that's a, you know, government agent, you know, regular person, you know, is it going to happen to you? It could. Chances are, you know, that you're not the target, but you could be in a drive-by. I don't know. It just sort of depends. But anyway, I would say think about it. At least you know about it. But I think that it's one of those things that if you don't do it, it's not like you got to sit there and set a timer to restart your phone once a week. But it's not going to hurt if you do it, just for the mere fact that it's a nice thing to do anyway. But it's an interesting thought, and it's one that I hadn't really heard before. I've interviewed a lot of security people, and I've never really heard this take. So whenever I haven't heard something before, it's always like, okay, that's interesting, and I can see why they recommend it. but I don't necessarily know if I'm going to adopt that practice, even though I probably do it anyway. I mean, I do turn my phone on and off once in a while, maybe not once a week, but anyway, now when you think about turning on and off your phone, you think about making it more secure, and so maybe you'll do it more often. All right, Bob writes in and says, I did get an Eero router, but I've had connection problems with my Canary. I'm told by Canary that Canary will not work with mesh routers. All other connections are fine. Regards, Bob. Yeah, Bob, you bring up a point that we hear every once in a while, this whole idea of these mesh routers not playing nice with some of these IoT devices, Internet of Things. And the Canary that you're talking about, if you're not familiar, if you're listening, is it's kind of an all-in-one security camera / security system. And the reason I think it's not working with it is because Canary probably works on a 2.4 gigahertz connection, whereas the Eero is spitting out a 5 gigahertz, and they do this thing where it kind of, they call it band steering. It tries to get the devices to connect to the 5G because that's the better signal. Now, it's not always the better signal. So there's two signals typically put out by a Wi-Fi router: 5G, 5 gigahertz, and then 2.4 gigahertz. 2.4 gigahertz travels further, but it's not as fast. 5 gigahertz doesn't travel as far, but it is faster. It's a faster connection. So that's why a lot of the new gadgets that you're using, like your iPhone and your laptop, are using mostly 5 gigahertz connections. It's a lot of these Internet of Things that use just a 2.4. And a lot of times it's fine, but I've definitely run into situations myself. Now, Bob, what I would recommend is on the Eero app, there is a little setting in there that will temporarily disable 5 gigahertz connections. And it's pretty smart how Eero did this. So what they did is they give you kind of a timed option. So if you go into the app, you go into, I think it's like advanced settings, and it says, you know, something to the effect of force 2.4 or, you know, whatever. And you click it, and next thing you know, the router will reset. It'll reset into just 2.4, and that's when you can set up your Canary. And then once your Canary is on board with the 2.4, it's going to stick there. It's going to stay there. And then you can, you know, just continue to use it, and the rest of your network will actually, the Eero will then restart, and it'll still continue doing dual band 2.4 and 5. I know this is very tricky, but it's a smart way of Eero to get around this problem of some things not connecting. Now, it doesn't always work, because I was testing a plug, like an outdoor plug, and it would only connect to 2.4, and I could not get it to connect to my Eero no matter what. It just would not do it. It was actually a Wyze plug, and it was quite embarrassing, actually, because I was on a Facebook or an Instagram Live trying to show people how easy it is to set up a plug, a smart plug outside, and it just would not connect. And I'm like, all right, let me take a pause here. Let me try this again. And I probably spent an hour on that thing trying to get it to work. I emailed Wyze, and they were not really aware of the issue. They said it shouldn't have happened. So I ended up buying just another a smart plug from Greeny, or is it Greeny or Genie? I forget, but it's one of the cheaper brands on Amazon, and it works just fine. It was like $18, still working. So now the Villo that I mentioned earlier, that's a $60 mesh router. The interesting thing about that is that they're well aware of this issue, just like Eero is, but they made it even easier. They basically set up the router so it automatically figures this out, and it will just kind of help these devices connect to the 2.4. So what I'm guessing they do is they must ping the device, say, okay, can you accept a 5 gigahertz connection? No? Okay, well, here's the other one we can do. And so I think that's what they're doing, just to make that a little bit easier and make people have less issues with these things connecting. So Dell, this is an article out of the Register. I don't know if you know this, but I used to edit this website called TechMeme, techmeme.com. It's still my favorite tech website of all times. And they actually don't write tech stories. They do write headlines, but the way this website works is the person who started it, Gabe Rivera, he basically programmed in an algorithm that kind of takes into consideration all these different tech websites. So they get fed into this entire system, and then it kind of figures out the way of laying out stories on a web page that are popular and what people are clicking, what people are reading, and not just one story. You can see all the sources of these stories. So what's really powerful about TechMeme is, like, let's say pretty much every story out there except for reviews has one source. And then all the blogs rewrite that story just citing that source, or sometimes they don't cite it at all. But what TechMeme does is it brings them all together. And then the magic part is that it figures out who had the original story. And when it figures out who had the original story, it generally puts that as the main link and all the other ones below it. Now, it doesn't always put that as the main link, because sometimes it's trying to, you know, show stories that are a little bit more easy to read. Like, there's a magic sauce to it that I'm not at liberty to explain, but there's definitely a rhyme and reason to the way things are laid out on this website. But anyway, it's a great website, and they have a article from The Register that talks about how if you're trying to buy a high-powered gaming PC, well, you better not be shipping it to California and five other states that include Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. And so specifically, it's this Alienware Aurora Ryzen Edition R10 gaming desktop. And if you go to the website, which I did, it's literally like a big, giant warning label that says if you try to... Let me read you exactly what it says. This configuration cannot be shipped to California, Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Vermont, or Washington due to power consumption regulations. Any orders bound for those states will be canceled. And so this computer is so, power hungry that you can't have it in California. I mean, it's pretty wild with, you think, okay, I've got a computer in my house and it's like it's using too much energy for the state of California. It's pretty wild. Next thing that's going to happen is on, December 9th, they're going to target computers with high-speed networking capability, multi-screen notebooks, and computers with cyclical behavior, whatever that is, and also monitors with high refresh rates. Those are going to be covered by these rules as well. So, it's one of those things that you kind of, it's like a little bit of a head scratcher, but, we've heard how Bitcoin computers can really use a lot of energy. I guess gaming computers do too. But in general, I guess my takeaway is if you have a computer and it's not going to sleep or the monitor's not going off, it's probably best to go into your power settings and make sure that that thing shuts off or goes to sleep after a certain amount of time. If you have a laptop, most of the time they do that anyway, but I've walked past plenty of computers in my lifetime that are just on like 24/7, like all the time. And so you don't want to be contributing to that problem. So, because maybe if we, if we do this right, we won't have to ban these energy-hungry PCs. Valerie emails. I get this email probably every other day. Valerie says, Rich, have you heard of the Boltz Pro Charger? What do you think about it? Thanks, Valerie. I hope I didn't answer this in my last... did I answer this in my last one? Let me see. I might have answered this question in my last podcast, but I'll give the answer again because I get this email so often. Clearly, Boltz Pro is advertising on social media. Clearly, it's just unbelievably amazing what it does. Clearly, the first ad is for Boltz Pro. And if you look at all the reviews, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3. The first four websites. Now, typically, if there was a big review on this thing, it would, it'd be pretty clear. I'm looking at this, and yeah, the first review that I see is from a website called The Signal, Santa Clarita Valley. Santa Clarita Valley's number one local news source, and this is totally advertorial because it's not talking about the charger as a review. It's literally just linking to the charger. So that's bogus. Then we've got a Quora website. And yeah, people are saying that it's probably not legitimate there. Then we have the Boltz Pro. Oh, wow. Then we have the Kent Reporter. And it's another sponsored content. So that's definitely. And then we have the lifestyle and tech looking blog, and written by John, our resident tech gadget expert. He's an avid gardener and has a black belt in karate. And this is their actual website, but it looks like a style blog, a lifestyle blog. And it says advertorial right at the top. And this is just a standard USB charger. This is something you order on Amazon from Anchor, and, you know, no big deal. So don't buy it. That's my recommendation. By the way, at the end of the website, it says, this is an advertisement and not an actual news article, blog, or consumer protection update. So clearly, you know, it's just one of these things that it all adds up to. Just don't. Just stay away from it. I mean, it's so interesting that there's this entire cottage industry of stuff advertised that's just so good and so too good to be true that people buy it, and it's just total, like, you don't need to buy it. Like, just go to a website like Amazon and buy the real thing. All right, if you have SiriusXM, you might want to check into the Platinum VIP subscription. This is brand new, and I should qualify that. If you have SiriusXM in two cars, that's when you should look at this. So SiriusXM, I think with the new Pandora owners, is definitely kind of cleaning things up a bit. I've always joked how every year my wife has SiriusXM in her car, and every year, you know, I call and it's like a $330 renewal fee. And then I call in and it's like, oh no, sir, it'll be $60 for the year. Oh, okay. But you have to do that every year. You got to call in. Now I've noticed they actually let you do it online. It used to be when you said, I want to cancel, you had to call in. Now they're giving you some offers on the website. Now, they may not be as good as calling in, but, you know, you can still kind of do it without any human interaction, which is my preferred way of doing things. But the SiriusXM Platinum VIP gives you up to two cars. So you can have a radio in each car, you know, a SiriusXM login for each, as well as special perks, including SiriusXM events, whatever, but nobody cares about that. Plus, VIP customer service with priority call handling. So it says it's $35 a month. This includes every channel. So you get all the channels. It says it's $35 a month, which, you know, for two cars, it's not too bad, but I guarantee you can get it for cheaper. The offer that I saw when I logged in was, it was either like $100 for 6 months or $100 for 12 months, which I tried to change for my wife's subscription so that I can get it in my car as well. You know, I like to sample what's going on, you know, in different mediums. And so, you know, but it would not let me switch for some reason. It just was not having it. So, but if you have two cars with SiriusXM and you like what you have there, then I would definitely check into the new Platinum offering. Oh, well, you know what that sound means. That is going to do it for this show. Wow. How does the time go by so fast when I do this show? If you would like to submit a question for me to answer, it's very easy. You can just go to richontech.tv and hit the email icon. Or you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/richontech. Hit the big blue send email button. Also, I would love it if you would rate and review this podcast. Just write a quick line about what you like about this podcast. That way, other people that are reading through can see, like, oh, yeah, okay, I do. That's a good point. First is just like, I love Rich. I love the podcast. It's such a great podcast. Like, tell people why. Give them the why. And that way, people will you know, be interested and maybe download it. You can find me on social media at Rich on Tech. And no matter where you live in the U.S., you can download the free KTLA Plus app on Apple TV, Fire TV, and Roku. Then scroll to the technology station or section. Why does it say station here? Oh, now I just gave it away that I read this. Scroll down to the technology section and watch all of my TV segments on demand. My name is Rich DeMiro. Thanks so much for listening. There are so many ways you can spend an hour of your time. I do appreciate you spending it with me. Stay safe. I'll talk to you real soon.